Glad you're here for the next level of insight. I'm working an article, and another piece of the puzzle came to me just last night. I was sharing with Jeannie. You know, the next newsletter we're going to send out is going to be an article on becoming your own primary healthcare physician, and to assist people in understanding what health really means and what needs to be done to truly advance your health, rather than sit still, or rather than sitting in a space of the disease of fear, where a lot of people live around their health. They've been so brainwashed with thought disorders based in fear and disease and suffering and pain. And that, of course, itself is a disease. And so we're here to resolve it. And we have many, many thought disorders that we've all been fed, one of them about how the disease process has to do with germs and the phobia that people have around germs. I know we watch AGT fairly often in the evening. There's some great stuff that happens on there, but there's one gentleman who has this phobia that he won't shake anybody's hands. I mean, this is an adult man, probably 50, and so terrified of germs, he won't shake anybody's hands. And this germ theory has been sold to us just right down the pike. And this is a piece of understanding that's going to go into the next newsletter that comes out. So if you want a copy of it, make sure you sign up on our mailing list if you're not there. But, and you've heard me explain it before, but last night as I was kind of working on some of the refinements of it, it was like a whole new way of understanding what germs have to do with disease and suffering, and why you must ultimately become your own primary healthcare provider if you're going to be truly healthy. And that is this germ theory that keeps so many people in fear, and fear itself is a tissue degenerating disease. That's why I think the man Yeshua 2,000 years ago, at least 15, 16, 17 times, I don't remember exactly, I did go count them once, but I think it was 17 times. He says, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not. Why? Because fear is a disease. Fear totally shifts blood flow, takes people out of higher brain function. It takes people out of the ability to thrive, the ability to digest, the ability to eliminate, the ability to produce red blood cells, hormones. I mean, everything is impacted by fear. And if you think the bug is the problem, you're mistaken, because there is no bug that's ever caused a disease. Two examples we'll use of that. Number one, let's imagine we build a whole new subdivision. You've maybe heard me share this before, but it fits, especially with what I'm going to share in a minute. So we build a whole new subdivision with 10,000 homes in it, and there is one house right in the middle of the subdivision that has a cat. Now, 10,000 homes surround this one cat, one house. Are cats contagious? Can you catch cats from your neighbor? Well, obviously, if that cat has kittens, that cat and her kittens are not going to the neighbor's house unless the neighbor puts out milk. If you feed them, they will come. So let's imagine this cat has kittens and she has 10 of them, and all of a sudden, what are they doing? They're roaming around the neighborhood and they find houses with a bowl of milk in front of them. And somebody who doesn't understand that principle, if you feed them, they will come, says, well, you know, there was only one house in that subdivision that had cats in it, and now there are 20 neighbors that have cats. And come back a year later, and there are 200 neighbors that have cats. And you say, I guess these neighbors just caught cats from their neighbors. Well, you know what? Not one house in that 10,000 home subdivision has got a cat that hasn't been putting food out for the cat. So we've been convinced to think of the germ theory of disease as being causative. In fact, I was listening to someone, a video on YouTube recently, a physician, and they're exposing some of the disease insanity, but their basic principle was germs cause disease. And Albert Einstein gives us a really powerful piece of information. He says, the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. If your theory is in error, then the things you observe will be perceptual constructs of your mind that are also in error. But you'll believe them because you see them. So nobody's ever caught a cat from their neighbor, but if they put out food and the cat's around, then the cat's going to come visit. When food is taken away, the cat will disappear. If you don't keep feeding it, it's not coming around. Well, it's no different with a germ. If there is, you know, germs are what we call reducing organisms. If there are cells that are in a diseased state, reducer organisms are designed to come and devour the diseased cell so that it protects the rest of the structure. But if you believe in the germ theory of disease, you think that germs cause disease because every time you see disease, there are germs there. But the reverse is true. The disease is there before the germ. Pardon me, before the germ multiplies. It is only if the cell goes into a disease state. What causes a disease state in the cell? Hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma. Sin. Remember now, the archery term, we're not talking about the Greek idea of sin. Remember the archery term, sin. If you were on the archery range and firing at the bullseye, and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell, sin. That's all the word means, is you're off the mark. You didn't hit the target. Pardon me, not you didn't hit the target. That's actually a different word. But you didn't hit the bullseye. That's sin, off the mark. Now, if you recognize, if you hold a newborn, you'll check out the energy of the newborn, and you will know absolutely without question that the human life is love. And this physiological device is designed to house love. That's all. It's designed for the expression, for the facilitation of bringing love into expression in the world. That's all human life, the human form, is designed for. And then go create from there. Go, and as the ancient scripture says, replenish the face of the earth. In other words, bring it to completion as a human being. But if the human being's lost in a mind that's filled with rage and generational patterns, cultural patterns, family patterns of greed, rage and grief and guilt and pain and drama and trauma, then there is a self within the mind, a picture generated by the mind out of those thought disorders that we tend to think we are. You've got to get rid of that guy. Yeshua said it very clearly 2,000 years ago. In order for you, being love, to live in your form designed for the expression of love, you, non-being, self-based in thought disorders, false image in your mind, have to die. You have to get rid of that. Forgiveness is how you get rid of that. So if you believe in the germ theory of disease, then the tendency is to live in fear of disease, in fear of germs, and that itself is the disease. So subtle, so tricky. Now let's take it another step. We've got two more steps to go to get the complete picture. Let's imagine that I have a 1-acre yard out in front of my house. Beautiful, nice green lawn all the way through. And let's imagine, actually, let's get rid of the lawn. I'm going to invite everybody to consider to start getting rid of your lawn, because a lawn is a useless waste of water and energy and the ability to grow things that benefit humans and other species in the world. Get rid of your lawn. We're starting. We just roped off or closed off an area about 100 feet by 25 feet, and we're putting in a garden. Once we get past frost date, we're putting in a garden for indigenous plants, or of indigenous plants, for pollinators. We're in a crisis point on the planet, maybe even more of a crisis than the whole global warming situation or scenario. And we've got this useless thing called a green lawn. Like, well, we've been taught, we've been brainwashed with it's pretty, but I'll tell you what, a field of wildflowers with pollinators in it, rather than something that doesn't feed or support any kind of life at all, except grubs and worms, or worms and bugs. Get rid of that. So let's imagine we've got this 1-acre field of indigenous plants, beautiful wildflowers. And I'm going to rope off way off on one corner of it. I'm going to rope off a square foot. And then I'm going to come back to the closest corner of the house and I'm going to rope off a square foot. And I'm going to get out my microscope and I'm going to go and I'm going to count every bug, every flea, every fly, every critter on this square foot. And I'm going to compare it to the number of critters, pests the world calls them, the other square foot, the other corner, the far side of the acre. Is there going to be much different in the count of bugs, buzzards, flying buzzards around or what have you? Probably not. It's probably going to be pretty similar. However, and this is about the germ theory of disease, however, if I take a dead rabbit and I put it on this corner or that corner and I leave it for a couple days, and let's imagine its body temperature is 98.6 degrees outside, I come back, let's say 5 days later, after placing the dead rabbit on one of those roped off square feet. One of those square foot spaces is going to be loaded with fleas and flies and bugs and buzzards, and the other one is not going to have changed at all. Now, reliably, with absolute 100% certainty and accuracy, which square foot is going to have the elevated count of bugs and buzzards? I promise you, it's going to be the square foot with the dead rabbit, where tissue is decaying, the food supply is there, and if you feed them, they will come. Now, it's the same inside the body as outside the body. If you feed hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and pain, disease, physical disease isn't the problem. It's the energetic patterns, the sin, the energies that are off the mark that we put in tissue that causes it to begin to deteriorate. Now, let's imagine I get a good strong poison spray and I go spray that square foot to get rid of all those bugs and buzzards and crazy things. Well, one, all my pollinators are gone. The plants, which are the life coming out of the soil, are probably going to die on that square foot if I spray it really well. And now what I'm going to have is I'm going to have a barren square foot over here where I took care of all those enemy bugs and buzzards. And I'm going to have the same thing happening on the other square foot as I had before I started. There are going to be plants. There are going to be pollinators. There are going to be things being fed and taken care of off of the one square foot. But the one I sprayed, so everything that was causing the problem, the way we think of the germs theory, everything that was causing the problem, we killed it. But what did we do? We also killed the host, the square foot of what was soil is now dirt. It's dead, it's barren, and it'll have trouble growing anything unless you load it with chemicals. And then when you load it with chemicals, you're going to have to keep spraying it because the plants that you put in the ground in that square foot, which if you give them enough chemicals, they will grow and they will look like plants. They won't really be plants, but they'll look like it. They're going to be weak, they're going to be frail. And there's going to be very little food value in them because life comes from life. If you spray that square foot until everything in it is dead and you put a plant in it and you expect to get life out of that death, out of dirt, as opposed to if it's soil, it's got life in it and it transfers life to the plant, you don't need a bunch of chemicals. You don't need more sprays to protect it from bugs coming. Only the weakened plants attract the bugs and the buzzards. Then let's go to the next piece of the story, and this is the piece that I just got last night. Both of those I've shared with you before. But do you believe the rain theory of flooding? The rain theory of flooding would say if there's rain, if there's a flood, you got rain, and the flooding is a result of the rain. Well, that's just about as silly as the germ theory. Because, well, here we are in Bristol, Virginia, we get rain all the time, but there's no flooding here. So rain doesn't cause flooding. However, Let's say that we have nothing on the soil, and when the rain comes, the rain washes out all the topsoil, which I forget exactly what the numbers are, but if you've got a soil bed, again, I'm not sure about the numbers, but they're pretty extreme. If you've got an acre of land that has live soil in it, that's really, truly vital and alive, that acre will store, and again, my numbers might be off, but it's similar to this. That acre will store approximately 10,000 gallons of rain. If you've got dirt, like the commercial farmer that sprayed everything to kill it and harvested the plant and then left the dirt sitting there, when the rain falls on that dirt, it's going to wash away the topsoil. There's going to be no soil left. There's only going to be dirt. And now you've got the conditions for flooding. If the terrain is right, it can rain all at once. You know, you go to the middle of the ocean and you can rain, you know, the most profound thunderstorms you've ever seen for weeks and nothing floods. If you have a plot of land that is properly tended to rather than chemically murdered so that it doesn't do its job, then the terrain is destroyed. And not that there is not a flood there because it rained. There's a flood there because the terrain could not handle the rain. It had been destroyed. So to believe in the rain theory of flooding is about as ridiculous as believing in the germ theory of disease. I actually had a conversation with a physician just today about that very thing. And he bristled at the thought that you don't need drugs to keep tissue healthy. I mean, he literally physically bristled as I talked about, you know, well, if you use an antibiotic, you kill, remember, it's anti-life, you kill the life, and now that the life has been killed, you better get some life back there to take care of the tissue, which is the terrain, the soil, so that it functions properly. He was just like, oh, you need to have those drugs. It's like, okay. I got it. You believe in the germ theory of disease. Throw that silly ass theory out of your mind, or you can never be your own primary healthcare provider. Are germs involved in disease? Absolutely. Where there's disease, there are quote unquote germs. Is rain involved in flooding? Absolutely. Where there's flooding, there's going to be rain. Sure. Or snow or similar. But the germ is no more the cause of the disease than the rain is the cause of the flood. And when you understand that, then you know that if you've got a flooding problem on your land, you've got to do something to take care of the terrain so that the terrain can handle the water that comes down there. And rare will be the flooding circumstance. Not saying it's impossible, but rare will be the flooding circumstance where the soil and the terrain is properly cared for. Is as it was designed to be. Rare is the disease process in tissue, where the terrain, the tissue, has the microorganisms that it needs, just like the soil has the microorganisms that it needs. If you put an bio means life, antibiotic. It was interesting when I first met Jeannie. Jeannie worked for a pharmaceutical company that manufactured antibiotics right here in Bristol. She worked for them for several years. And fortunately or unfortunately, it's sad that they decided they could go to a third world country to manufacture their product and do better with it. So they basically got rid of their manufacturing facility here. It was right timing for us because we were talking about going on the road and Jeannie got a retirement package by going early so others could keep working. But when it came time for them to deal with that facility, they had a beautiful building. I don't know, how many square feet was that, honey? A couple hundred thousand? I don't even remember what it was. Beautiful piece of property, beautiful building. And they tried to get another anti-bio company to take it over, because that's the only business they could put in it, because the building was so toxic, so deadly for humans. And interestingly, they put out, when they couldn't get another company to come in, they put out a report. And the report said that in order to sell the building to anything other than an antibiotic manufacturing company, they had to, quote, level the building to the grassy knoll. That means even the concrete pad it was built on had to be removed in order to sell the property. That's how poisonous it was. Now, does that mean never use an antibiotic? No. I've had a few rounds of antibiotics over the years, in recent years, with some challenges with teeth. Yep. I didn't know any better. My parents didn't know any better. And I thought candy was just a fine thing, and Coca-Cola and all that garbage for years. Didn't know any better. I think about that now, and like, you couldn't force one of those things in my mouth now. But I didn't know any better. So I have utilized an antibiotic. But when I'm complete with that antibiotic, the next thing I do is pump my body full of probiotics, replace the microorganisms that are designed for the soil so that the soil lives, rather than slaughter it with an antibiotic and watch what happens. Because the person starts on antibiotic one, it won't be many months before they'll have a new set of symptoms and they'll need another drug. And then it won't be very long before there'll be another set of symptoms and they'll need another drug. Now they're on their third drug, which interacts with the previous two, which are just going berserk within the system. I was talking to, as I say, a physician and one of his assistants last week. And I was doing a consult with them. And when they said, "How many drugs are you on?" And I said, "None," they looked at me like I must have been from Mars. And the lady said, "Oh, we have people that come in here with pages of drugs that they take. Literally, they've got them printed out, pages of them. If you think Korean can be healthy with that, think again." And sadly, we live in a culture that, by their own figures, the AMA admits that somewhere between 250,000 and 500,000 people are killed every year by treatment, by medical treatment. And we're something like, we spend, again, I don't remember exactly the numbers, but we spend like at least 100% more than country in the world on what's called health care, but is really disease care. And we're something like number 49 in the world. Number 49 in developed nations. America is number 49 with health outcomes and preventable disease. Guess what country's number one? Japan, with health outcomes. Guess where Japan comes in with how much they spend on health care? Of all of the developed nations in the world, Japan spends less on health care than any nation in the world, and they're number one in health outcomes. America spends far more on disease care, calling it health care. And again, my numbers might be off. Something like number 49. It's like, wait a minute. If anybody looks at that and says, what's the steal here? If they actually can comprehend that, who are you going to go to for your health advice? You better have enough knowledge to be your own primary. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if there's a specialist and there's something you know that you need, go get that specialist. The technology, what people in that field are doing is absolutely phenomenal. Amazing. You know, we talk to people all the time that have had joint. I mean, you think about it. Somebody had the hip, they cut the leg, they cut the hip out of the sacrum, and they put a new one in, and man, this person's rocking just a few weeks later. That's just amazing. But you got to know when you need that. We actually have a friend who was having such hip pain that he was considering that. This goes back about probably a year and a half ago now. And I told him about the Avison. He got an Avison. And within a week and a half, his hip pain was gone. And he had a trip. He travels quite a bit in his business. And so he had a flying trip, and he flew out to do whatever it was he was doing. It was only going to be a couple of days. And he didn't take the machine with him. And he's like, I'm right back with my hip pain. I will never go anywhere without that machine now. If I'm flying somewhere for one night, it goes with me. Healthcare. What does it take to support health within this structure? Fighting disease is not healthcare. So I'm putting that out just because that's what's on my plate right now in the form of writing. And we hope to get that out to you soon. I'm not sure how long it's going to take to complete it. It's a pretty big task, but we're working on it. And if that arouses any questions for you, comments, thoughts, do you have beliefs? If anything that I just said not make sense, then I would love it if you push one and tell me what it is that doesn't make sense so I can look and say, gee, you're on. I need to know more about that. Or I can explain to you why and how this fits and makes sense. There is
we do
a...
We have a hand.
Well, let's say hello to the hand.
Okay.
Before, hello, hand.
Before we do, I was just going to add, you know, when I worked at the pharmaceutical company, it was also, like, I worked at the office not down in the plant, but I could tell by the smell that was coming through our air conditioner which of the antibiotics they were running. And it circulated even into our office because we shared air conditioners. But our printing department had to be in a separate building because some of the labels that they printed were other products that were manufactured at other sites that were not antibiotics. And they could not print the labels in the building, and they possibly get contaminated with penicillin. And you know, then somebody buy that product, and if they're allergic to penicillin, then, you know, just
and
picking
die.
Up the bottle. Yeah.
Yep.
And also, which they didn't enforce this, but when we were hired there, we had to sign that we understood that, like, if we set up our desk with, say, pictures of our family and, you know, brought our purses in from the car and things like that, that they had the right to say, you can't take it home. So,
yeah,
and,
if you left,
and
if
when
you left,
bought,
they could take your personal
yeah,
belongings
say,
and your desk and such, and nope, too dangerous.
Yep, and they also, you know, when we did go down to the plant, we had to put on hairnets and jackets and booties over our shoes and everything else just to walk into the plant, and then we had to take those back off before we went into our office. And so, you know, they had some very strenuous guidelines that we had to, because so they knew, you know, and there are so many people that are allergic to antibiotics, they couldn't take the chance that, you know, one of your spouse or your children or, you know, somebody at your home would be allergic to it, and they could be held liable if you carried it home on your clothing or whatever.
Yeah, my input would be that nobody in the world is allergic to antibiotics. That's a misnomer. They've told us a story. No, what it is that people, there are people who are sensitive to the poison. Everybody that takes one is being poisoned. They're sensitive to the poison to the point where it's life-threatening. That's what they call an allergy. So everybody has that. It's just that some people can tolerate it and deal with it, and some people can't. And so, and if I remember correctly, I believe the people who actually worked in the plant in order to go out for lunch and or in order to go home, they had to change clothes. They had to shower and change clothes. Am I remembering that correctly?
That's correct. And then when they got back, they had to put a new uniform on.
Yeah. So you work your work day. You can't go home until you've taken off all of your clothes, shoes, socks, showered, and put clean stuff on to go out the door. And, you know, why do we have the worst health outcomes in the world, in America? You know, they've predicted, and it's interesting how the theory you have about a thing determines what you observed. You can observe that your mind is even capable of producing. It's interesting that there are people in that field who study the toxic effects and the antibiotic-resistant bugs that develop. And what they're telling us, the experts in that arena who've done the research, say that, you know, the number one killer in the world today, or in the country, I'm not sure whether this extends to the world or it's just America, but the number one killer is heart disease, cancer, number one, number two. And they're predicting that by 2050, so 25, 30 years down the road, they're predicting that the number one killer will be antibiotic-resistant bugs. They kill hundreds of thousands of people every year. That is, you know, you take the drug, and 99% of the bacteria that that bug's going after are killed, and 1% pops its head up stronger. You know, you've heard that saying, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. Well, that's the superbug by 2050. And guess what the antibiotic researchers, the pharmaceutical companies are saying we have to do in order to solve that problem? They're saying we have to develop stronger antibiotics to kill those things. And the stronger antibiotic means you get a stronger bug that survives, and then you need, it's a downward deadly cycle. That's why by 2050, you know, antibiotics, they call them miracles, and oh, how many lives? Yes, they've saved millions of lives, and guess what? The piper is being paid. The antibiotic-resistant bugs that are developing because these things are poisons, and when they learn, the bug learns to survive the poison, then they become that more virulent if somebody's got a food supply for them, and they land in that person's energy field, in that person's body. And so that thinking is we need stronger. My offering is we need to do the reverse. We need to stop using these things. Yes, there are places, there's no question they save lives. Just awesome. However, they can't heal a life. They save lives, yep. The terrain is so weak that the bug grows. Oh, big trouble. Knock them out. Yes, when you poison the terrain and you poison the bugs, most of the bugs die. The symptoms of that go away. The terrain is weakened to another level, and another round of superbugs develop. We need to cut back the use of those things to where, yes, they are beneficial in that they can save lives and only be used in the most dire cases where a life needs to be saved. However, and this is shocking and people need to wake up and they need to speak up, 70%, in case you didn't get that number, 70% of antibiotics used in America today are used on farms and have no medicinal purpose whatsoever. Guess what happens when you feed farm animals antibiotics? Their bodies go into such a defensive posture that they blow up like ticks. Guess what? If you've got a 100-pound cow tick, you can get, you know, whatever, 80 cents a pound. But if you can get that puppy to blow up just as fast and produce a 200-pound tick on the same amount of food, a 200-pound cow on the same amount of food in the same amount of time, you get twice as much profit. 70% of antibiotics used in America today are used on farms to grow animals. That's one of the reasons why I would offer, if you start looking, just about every pandemic that's, you know, we've gotten pretty familiar with pandemics recently. Every pandemic that comes down the pike has to do with animals. It's like, you want to be your own healthcare provider? You got to understand this stuff. It's just like crazy, but it's a multi-trillion dollar business. So just some things to be aware of. And so let's say hello to whoever's calling.
Hi, I believe it's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Welcome, young lady.
Hey, I didn't press one, but I'm very happy to talk to you, and I do have a question. So you sure you
awesome.
Got the right number one on there, Jeannie? Somebody else might
say
have
it
pressed
again?
One.
No, it shows oh, okay. your hand up.
Oh, okay. Well, it was left.
Well, it must just intuitively know, Susan. It just knows you have something to say.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just a habit of the machine. Oh, here's Susan. Let's put her hand up.
Okay.
We love it when you put your hand up. You always have great questions.
Oh, well, we'll see this time. So, a while back we had a sort of resurgence of COVID in our church, and some of us began wearing masks. And is that stupid because the germ theory isn't applicable, or is that a different thing?
No, I think it's sanity. Now, you know, there's a statement in the scriptures where it says, do not tempt the Lord thy God. You know,
okay.
I would say, you know, I mean, there are actually, if you do some historical research in the antibiotic field, there are physicians who went against it and said, that's crazy. And I couldn't recount any of the specifics of it this moment, but if you do some research, you'll find it. Let's say it was smallpox. So what this researcher who said, the bug is not the problem, has done, is gone and taken a concentrated dose of that bug and experienced no traumatic side effects, no disease process, because they had enough confidence in the strength and the power of their terrain. They were healthy. They didn't have the gay tissue, so the bugs went into their bodies, but there was nothing to feed on them, so they were eliminated. So for me, could I say, oh, well, now I've had COVID twice. It was a wonderful health upgrade. Now, I could go out and say, well, I've had it twice, and both times I got healing in things that were a challenge to my body. And so I'm going to say, phew, I'm fine. So I mean, COVID can get a cough in my face. No, I'm not going to tempt. No, thank you. I'll pass. If I know that COVID's running rampant, I wear a mask. And I think that's only sane because I know that my tissue structure is imperfect. I know that my thinking is imperfect. And so I'm going to take reasonable precautions. I'm not going to run out and bathe myself in bugs to see how well I'm doing. So that would be my take. I would say everyone, it's reasonable caution. If it's out there, you protect yourself. You take reasonable precautions and you look at what it takes to keep your tissue structure strong and vital, and you do that as well. You make sure that you got enough zinc, elemental zinc in your structure. Make sure you got enough D3, you got enough vitamin C. You got the things that strengthen the tissue structure to fight off the critter if it comes in, that you've got a strong immune system. But I think it's silliness. I mean, if we look, you know, there's a certain percentage of the population or a certain political group of the population is going masks, COVID, blah, blah, blah. And if you look statistically, they're the people who are dying of COVID who say, oh, masking, that's silly. No, masking isn't silly. There's some good research. Now, there's some lousy research. And unfortunately, in that community, that lousy research has gone around. And people have gone, look, this doctor said masks are useless. And oh, it reduces your oxygen level. Well, okay, there is somebody out there saying that. But then again, here's a university that did research, and the surgeons that use masks, you know, have been doing them for years to protect themselves from organisms that don't belong in their structure, whether they create disease in them or not. Some of these people have triple masked themselves and literally measured their oxygen levels, and it hasn't harmed them. But there is a story out there, and some people are believing it. And literally, if you look by the state and the color of the state, they're the people that are dying.
Yeah, I read that too.
So that would be my take. Wear a mask. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And the other thing is, closely related, as I said last week, I had a big tooth removed, and I've had a pacemaker put in years ago, and the battery was just changed. And the dentist said, all right, I don't want to do this. This is a very enlightened dentist. I don't want to do this, but I'm going to give you an antibiotic.
Yep.
And I want you to take probiotics. I want you to counter that, but I just want to play it safe. So I took my antibiotics.
Yep.
I saw the viewer, and I took them. But, I'm fine, but anyway, sometimes we just have to do the lesser of two evils, if that's what it is.
Absolutely. I mean, nowhere. That's why we need to be our own primary health care provider, know enough to know what I need and what I don't need. And a lot of heart attacks, quote unquote, cancel the heart attack thought, a lot of heart attacks are directly related to tooth infections.
Yeah.
And bleeding gums and infectious agents that get in there and then get to the heart and create problems. So there's a direct relationship. And so I'd say you had a really awesome dentist who said, you know, this isn't what I'd rather do, but we need to be safe. And that's true. And then that this guy who prescribed the antibio also said, now you need to take the probio. You need to replace what we just killed in order to protect it. That's perfect wisdom to me.
Oh, good. Yeah, and he said vitamin C. He said, you know, drink a lot of water. Anyway,
elemental zinc, D3, all of those things keep the immune system going. Elderberry.
Oh, yeah.
Quercetin.
And so that leads me.
There's several things.
Now that you're in your naturopath mode, and since you're there, now I think I forgot my question. Oh, good old brain. Well, I can't remember my question.
So then if we're looking at the strength of tissue versus the virility of the bug that comes in, it's finding the balance. It's keeping the tissue at a strength level where something does come in that doesn't belong, or, you know, a lot of the bacteria and such that people are afraid of or that are related to disease are already all within our body, but they're kept in check and balanced, and they're necessary there. If they weren't there and a certain part of the tissue structure starts to deteriorate, the long-term impact of that deterioration, which means putrefaction, literally, you know, you take a piece of meat and you lay it on the counter, come back in 3 or 4 days and take a sniff. No, not very nice.
Yeah.
If that's happening in the body, then those reducer organisms are designed and they're in the body already. And if it goes out of balance, that when the reducer organism expands and creates quote unquote infection or becomes what we call an infection, that's a signal that I need to do something to strengthen the tissue structure of my body and to bring that back into balance. I don't need to get rid of those things. They're a necessary, normal, natural part of the process, but they need to be in balance. And if I get an infection, I'm signaling myself that something's out of balance in how I'm thinking, how I'm exercising, how I'm eating, how I'm eliminating, how I'm chewing, how much fluid I allow or I bring into my structure. All of those things are part and parcel of how you maintain a healthy tissue structure and keep the organisms that are designed to be there in balance. Does that ring the brain cells you were looking for?
Yeah. And you would say then, I imagine you would say, if you're eating clean, organic vegetables grown out of real soil, you shouldn't need vitamins or a multivitamin or anything. And it's funny, when the doctor asked me, are you taking any medications? And I say, I'm taking a ton of supplements, but I don't take medicines, except actually I just started one, a statin drug, because of cholesterol, and it's that high. But he said, I'm older and I ought to have this. For a year I avoided obeying him, but now I'm taking this small statin thing. But I wasn't originally asking you about that. I was asking you about multivitamins. Do you take them? Do you recommend them? Are they dumb? What?
I don't take a multi, but I do use vitamins. And I take specific ones that, you know, we're eating more and more out of our own garden, but it's pretty much impossible to buy everything we'd want to buy organic. And when you realize that as far back as the 1930s, they were informing Congress that the soils in America were devoid of minerals, then we do take supplements, for sure.
Yeah.
And for me, that's like a prophylactic. It's a safety factor that if I'm not getting enough of what I need,
well,
or if I'm under an excess stress, the food I'm eating may not be enough to provide what's there. So, yes, I do supplementation.
And I,
and
love
I think that
it,
a reasonable amount of supplementation. Go ahead.
Sorry, I interrupted. You said something the other day about eating some forbidden fruit, some sweets.
Oh, no,
you
we wouldn't ever.
Decided,
no,
well,
we never, ever, ever do that. Don't
I'm
accuse us of that now, young lady.
I'm sorry, I was talking while you were talking, so I didn't hear a thing.
I know, I was just objecting to your accusations.
No, I had something to say, so shut up for a second. I just want to say that I love that you blessed the food, because in a way, you were strengthening your body to receive the food and not be subject to anything that might not be so good in the food. I mean,
exactly.
That's a serious thing to bless the food.
Very serious. And I think that especially something that, you know, is more toxic than, like we went out for dinner the other night, and the restaurant we went to serves this awesome key lime pie that's just loaded with sugar. So, so yes, a focused blessing. And I think that, you know, when you realize that we're creators and the energies that we create with impact what we put in our mouths before they go there, I think that we can literally change the structure to a degree. And as you say, by strengthening the tissue structure, also reinforce. So, yeah, if you're going to, it's a whole lot. The more disease is caused by disintegrative thinking than is caused by disintegrative substances, I think.
I bet that's true.
Rather than, oh, this is sugar, it's bad, it's terrible, but I'm going to eat it anyway. It's, oh, yep, it's sugar.
Yeah.
I'm going to bless it. I'm going to just enjoy it. Love it. Unfortunately, I was brought up as a kid.
I think we both missed what we said. Would you say again?
Yeah. I was just saying I was brought up as a kid with those tastes that are still, you know, kind of near and dear. And every once in a while I engage and bless it and love it. The gentle art of blessing.
All right. All right. Well, that's good. Thanks for the
you're welcome.
The nutritional session.
So, sweet. Did that get you back to your question about the antibiotic thing?
Oh yeah, that was fine. That was a good answer. I'm glad you. You know, I do. I take them reluctantly, and I don't take them unless I absolutely have to, but this tooth was way back in my mouth, and the infection was right up in my sinuses, so I didn't want to fool around.
So my offering would be every time you take them, bless them and enjoy them and thank them. Appreciation.
Right.
You know, they've done a lot of university-level research on appreciation and gratitude and how it changes physiology. So, every
That's
time you
great.
Decide to do one, thank it and love it, or be loving its presence and receive its blessing.
Okay.